From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with a local sixth grade student named Avalon Fox. Avalon was a guest on this program earlier this month. She's a previous winner of an anti-gun violence essay contest, and she was talking about her fears of living in a part of Rochester that sees a lot of violence. Avalon said after a shooting in her neighborhood, she didn't leave her house for a week. We'll hear some of her comments coming up here, but Avalon is not alone in her fears. This should not be how kids grow up. The city of Rochester remains in a state of emergency when it comes to violence in the community. As of May 15th, there have been 64 shooting victims in 2023, 10 deaths. Last month, Mayor Malik Evans extended the state of emergency order through June 14th. As we've discussed on this program, there are many efforts to curb violence in this community. Some come from the government level, others come from local groups. Some are grassroots efforts and have been initiated by residents. One of them is an upcoming event hosted by the Lewis Street Committee. The Lockdown on Violence event is aimed at encouraging neighbors to commit to better solutions than violence. This hour, we preview the event. We're going to talk about what people in our community are experiencing, and I'd like to welcome our guests now. In studio with us, Suzanne Mayer is co-founder and president of Hinge Neighbors. Suzanne, thanks for being back with us. Remind our listeners what Hinge Neighbors is.
Well, thank you for having us. Hinge Neighbors is an organization that helps to empower people to find their voice so they can be heard. And John Dunwoody and I started this organization, so we were worried about people living next to the Inner Loop North would not have some sort of voice in what was going into the Inner Loop. So we've been working with the neighbors on both sides of the Inner Loop, and that's how I met Nancy.
And Nancy is here. Nancy Machuska is chair of the Lewis Street Committee. Nancy, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
And with us on the line, Mikewell Powell is executive director of the Reentry and Community Development Center. Mikewell, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you. Happy to be here.
And Louis Aponte is with us, a community liaison and paramedic for Monroe Ambulance. Louis, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
That's correct. I retired from Monroe, and I'm at American Medical Response now that responds to calls throughout the city of Rochester.
Very good. Well, thank you for being with us, Louis. We appreciate you. And I want to ask all of our guests just sort of kind of an overview before we talk about the Lockdown on Violence event that's coming up hosted by the Lewis Street Committee. I want to ask what our guests are seeing. And I want to start by listening to some of the comments that we recently heard from this sixth grade student that I mentioned, Avalon Fox. This is Avalon on this program earlier this month, talking about how living in a neighborhood where it is common to hear shooting, it is not uncommon to hear about someone injured or even killed, what that is like, how it makes her feel as a kid growing up in the city.
Most of the time, when we hear those gunshots, we all go over to my mom's room and we sit there until they stop, because there's nothing we can do about it if someone has a gun outside. We can't just go out and, like, unarm them. So we just have to wait and listen, and it's horrifying sometimes. There was a gunshot, like, right in front of my house once. Somebody died, and the person got away. I didn't go out of my house for a week because I was scared they would find me while I was walking down my street, and that I shouldn't have to be, like, scared like that just to walk down my street and go to the library.
That's Avalon Fox on this program earlier this month, a sixth grade student. And to state the obvious, kids should not have to grow up that way. But I want to ask our guests how they see the current situation, because when you do look at just the raw numbers, some of local government leaders have told us they think some of these interventions are starting to work. The numbers year to year are down for now. We always see a pickup in the summer months of violence, unfortunately, but so far the numbers are, I guess you would say, better than a year ago. Suzanne, what are you seeing? What are you hearing?
I hear a lot of, we hear gunshots in my neighborhood sometimes, and we hear that somebody has had an accident nearby. We'll hear racing through our neighborhoods. We hear a lot of, I live on University Avenue, and lots of traffic, very loud noises at night, people walking on the streets. I really have no, do I walk around my neighborhood? Absolutely. I'm not going to give into that. And I love my neighborhood. So I think it's mostly people think that oh, it's in the poor areas. It's not. Violence affects us all, and that's what worries me. I don't want to have this continue. It expands. It's everywhere. The feeling that you can, you know, you can bully people or you can have guns or whatever, it's very frightening for all of us, old, young, 8 to 80, I guess you would say.
Sure, and I understand your point when you say, I'm not going to let this keep me from walking my neighborhood, from doing what I want to do. I'm sure you can also understand why a sixth grade girl would say, I didn't leave the house for a week when someone was shot in front of my house.
Absolutely. It's like post-traumatic, you know, stress in them. It's really difficult for kids to say, I don't feel safe. And that they should be able to walk to school. I mean, I grew up on a farm. I walked everywhere. And I didn't ever have that thought of not being safe. And that I wish that every child in the United States could have that. Unfortunately, it's not the case.
Nancy, what do you hear when you hear Avalon's voice talking about gun violence?
When I hear her voice, it really touches my heart as a mother, a grandmother, and a community leader. What I would say to her would be that actually guns don't kill people. People kill people. And should you have fear? Yes. You never know who has a gun and who has the wrong intentions. I would actually let her know that it is great to hear her voice and that she's standing up for her rights and speaking out for her fear and that she's not alone. That we're all a community here in Rochester. It's no longer just a part of certain neighborhoods that we need to stand together as a city.
How have things been going in your neighborhood?
Well, to be honest with you, I had an incident that happened 2 weeks ago with me. I was on my way to have lunch with my daughter, and I was running a little bit late, and so I stepped back, and I was just about to call her to let her know I was running late, and I looked out the window, and there was two cars speeding right past my where I live at in the neighborhood, and there was gunfire, not only one shot, but six shots from this direction and seven shots from the other direction.
It made coming me a from little, the cars?
Yes, driving by. So it was like a drive-by shooting at each other. So I stepped away from the window, and it made me a little bit nervous and scared, and I'm kind of glad that I was running late because I could have been out there. By the time I gathered my thoughts I gathered myself to be able to build up my
courage
to be able to go out there and face reality. The police officers were already there. And then I realized that the police officer was taking pictures of my vehicle. Yes, my vehicle was shot.
Mm. I'm glad you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
And before I turn to the other guests, what the event that you just described, it would always surprise anyone, but I want to ask you this in the context of, are these kind of events common or not uncommon? Were you surprised that it happened right in front of your house?
Yes, I was really surprised it happened right in front of my house. So far as being common, usually when the violence and the shooting take place in your neighborhood, it's usually someone that's not from your neighborhood. It's someone coming through, driving through your neighborhood or after someone that's in your neighborhood. So it's difficult to say or to face reality so far as it being common. It's not a common thing. It's not how you want to be raised and be able to see in your neighborhood, but it needs to stop.
Mike Well-Powell, Executive Director of the Reentry and Community Development Center. How do you see the situation in the city right now?
I think it was sad to hear the young lady speak, but it is an issue, especially like gun violence is an issue. I think it's kind of unfair to say that violence is down when comparing it to last year's numbers.
Okay.
Because last year's numbers was like a record high.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, there's going to be some type of decline. But all of the years before the spike in violence from like 2020, 2021, it still was an issue, gun violence, even though it wasn't the number of homicides that we've seen in the last 3 years. So it's been a continuous issue. So that's why I was happy to be a part of this event, the Lockdown on Violence, because we really just wanted to bring everybody together who feel that is an issue so that we can take some type of stand against gun violence.
Michael, what are the kinds of interventions that you think could work with this problem?
We was having this, it's ironic that you asked that. We were just having that discussion at our last meeting. I just think that we need more programs for youth. I think that elected officials and local government should see how we can fund the grassroots organizations that's doing the work on the ground. Me personally, I started a summer camp at Sayo Street for at-risk youth. This would be our third year. And we look at that as violence prevention, trying to figure out how do we get children in a position to where they don't pick up guns in the first place or they don't look to sell drugs in the first place. So like focusing on like some preventative measures instead of reactive measures.
Louis Aponte, how do you see the situation right now?
I think our city is under siege. I feel for that child as in the EMS world. I mean, we're the ones that are taking care of these gun victims, gun violence victims. We see the families. We see everything, both sides of it in a way, you know, and the trauma that the children are going through. It's out of control. I mean, the children are suffering their own version of PTSD because they're not going to a park to go play. The parents don't want them out in the open area just to make sure they don't get caught up in the middle of something. So, you know, when it talks about numbers going down, it's I personally feel that a big part of that is because of the increased violence where there seems not to be any change, a lot of things are going unreported now. And I think that's a humongous issue that people aren't talking about is because I think the citizens have given up. You know, and they're just trying to keep their own safe right now.
Well, let's talk about this event coming up. It's the Lockdown on Violence, an event hosted by the Lewis Street Committee, Saturday, June 3rd. From noon to 2:30, it's happening at the park next to the Lewis Street YMCA Neighborhood Center at 53 Lewis Street. Nancy Machuska, tell us about this event. What's the goal? What's going to happen here?
Well, I could start off with saying that we have a Fairy Grandparents group. That's
the Fairy Grandparents.
Yes. So this group, we came up with the idea to get back to the neighborhood. You don't have to be a grandparent. It's basically adopting a family and taking care of the children that are in our neighborhood. Just rebuilding a village in our neighborhood. So it was an idea that I came up with. And through the Fairy Grandparents, we meet on Fridays. We decided we wanted to do something against violence. And so we started shooting ideas out, and we wanted to get everyone involved in the city that we could think of, all the first responders, all the community centers, and all the schools, and all the important people that we that build a community involved into in this. So we came up with the Lockdown on Violence. What could we do if we put a lockdown on violence? So we decided to get locks and have people come from different organizations and be part of this to be able to put locks that stand for we're putting a lockdown on violence. That's how the idea came to be.
All right. So Suzanne Mary, do you want to weigh in on what you hope to see here?
Yes. Well, we hope to see the neighbors come out. And
good attendance.
It's great attendance.
A lot of people.
Exactly. We hope to see there is a yard sale going to happen. There's some food. There's going to be some music. And I think there'll be some tables there for certain vendors in the area. Well, what we really want to do is say this is a community. I When Nancy asked me to join this committee about this, I thought, oh, this is great. I'd love to do that. So I think it's, I like being able to walk to from my home to the Lewis Street Center, and I have a group of friends there that, that greet me with hugs. It's wonderful. And I want to continue that. And so I think that the open door that the neighborhood has for me, I'd like to see it and how they actually honor the youth in the neighborhood coming to play basketball, et cetera. I think we want to see more people constantly there. If you have more eyes on the street, people tend to be out on the street, and people then have a community sense. If we're not outside, we're not walking, we give up to the fear of not participating. And overcoming any kind of fear that you might have. When I first started walking in the neighborhood, and I still have friends who say, are you still walking in that neighborhood? And I said, yeah, it's my neighborhood. I'm walking there.
they have a definite tinge to the word that, don't they? That neighborhood.
Exactly.
They mean something by that.
Yes, they think that it isn't a neighborhood where people care. It is. It's a very warm community. The community that I have been welcomed into is a community that cares about each other. They care about the youth. They care about finding ways to organize to make life better. And I think that that's what we need in any community. And I think that we have to encourage and support any kind of movement like that. So why am I here? Because of that. And I think that the more we can do to have make people feel safe or come out on the streets and walk around. When people ask us about our neighborhood, and we have lots of people from, we have press that come in and ask us about the Inner Loop North. And we say, well, the best thing to do is come to Rochester and walk with us through the neighborhood. You'll find it's a great neighborhood.
Yeah, I think this is something that people in suburbs, people who do not live in city neighborhoods, people who have not spent time in city neighborhoods, often do have that stereotyping or that assumption. I remember years ago on this program, Assemblymember Joe Arrigo told me he would not go to the northeast part of Rochester even in an armored car. And whoa. I said to him, I live in Rochester. We can take a walk in any neighborhood you want. Let's go. And he said, not unless you got bulletproof windows. Yeah. This was a member of the New York State Assembly. Now, he hadn't spent time in those neighborhoods for years. He actually grew up in a part of the city, but hadn't spent time for years and years. And when all you see on the nightly news is a police blotter, and when all that you hear is that it's a, quote, war zone, it's hard to imagine that neighbors care. That there are communities of people who want to raise children and grandchildren and protect each other and care about each other and want to have cookouts together and everything that people listening want to do. But I urge you to get out of that stereotype. There absolutely are. It is not Pollyanna for Suzanne to say this. It's not Pollyanna for me as a city resident to say this. In every zip code, there are wonderful, loving people. And you probably can walk pretty safely in a lot of places. Now, the drive-by stuff that Nancy's talking about is a real concern, and it has to be addressed. I'm not saying that there's no risk to anybody anywhere, but I'm saying be very careful with stereotyping. Mike Well, do you want to add to that?
Another thing that I'm excited about this event is that it do allow the opportunity for people that normally wouldn't come into the neighborhood to come in. And I was just talking to Mayor Evans yesterday, and I was having a similar conversation that the Sire Street neighborhood, late 80s, did have some challenges. But if you walk through there now, it's just so beautiful now when compared to the 90s. So I really want people to get an opportunity to come. And I know it's happening at the Lewis Street Center, but we really want people from all over the city, from the west side, from the south side, from all over the city to come into the neighborhood to support us for this event, because it's all of us taking us in, because violence is just not happening in one secluded area of the city. it's happening in all areas of the city. So we just all want everybody to come to Lewis Street. And of course, it's symbolic. But the presence of us standing together, I think at the end of the day, it means a lot.
Lewis, do you want to add to that, too?
I agree 100% with that. I'm a city resident, born and raised on Clinton Avenue. Have volunteered on all sides of the city for all types of different events. And we push for AMR to be a part of the solution due to the fact that, you know, no one calls an ambulance on a good day. It's always a bad day if you need an ambulance. So it's our duty to be part of it and to show that there is help out there. There's people that want to listen and people that want to participate. So I think that's a huge thing for us.
As I mentioned, the event, the Lockdown on Violence event, is hosted by the Lewis Street Committee Saturday, June 3rd, starting at noon at the park next to the Lewis Street YMCA Neighborhood Center on Lewis Street. And Nancy, if people are not from that neighborhood, can they come hang out and visit anyway?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Big open event.
Yes, it is. I want to touch bases on that. It's no longer the west side, the east side, north side, or the south side of the city. It's the city of Rochester coming together for an event that needs to be take place so far as violence. It's all over the city. Yeah, you'll come to the east side of our neighborhood and we'll have our open arms there and we'll be welcoming everyone that wants to participate in this.
Agree, Suzanne?
Oh, yeah. I think that you'll see that these are people who love Rochester. We love Rochester. We honor it. We're happy to be living here. I retired here. And I think that it's important to do whatever you can do to say and honor and show that. Yes, everybody should come. And just, you don't have to come forever for the long time. Just come and drop in and just to see what this place is really like.
We're talking to guests about the state of violence and community intervention, neighborhood grassroots efforts, and more in the city of Rochester here on Connections Today. Our guests include Suzanne Mayer, who you just heard, the co-founder and president of Hinge Neighbors, Nancy Machuska, chair of the Lewis Street Committee, Mikewell Powell on the line with us, executive director of the Reentry and Community Development Center. Lewis Aponte is, let's see here, Lewis. Give me your updated title for the work you're doing in the community.
Okay, I am current chair of Jozana Neighborhood Association, CHNA. I'm co-chair of MNBN, which is Many Neighbors Building Neighborhoods, which is kind of collaborative with the neighborhood presidents to try to, you know, not reinvent the wheels on all sides of the city. I'm the community liaison and paramedic for American Medical Response that covers the city of Rochester and other areas outside of the city. Very heavily involved in anything that has to be done and bringing resources into the communities or bringing, letting people know what resources are available, I think are very important to me personally.
We appreciate that, Lewis. We have to take our only break of the hour. And when we do that, we're going to come back with some of your feedback on the question of violence. What is driving it? What can improve it? And what's going to be happening? And who's going to be taking part in the Lockdown and Violence event coming up on Saturday, June 3rd? Coming up in our second hour, going through cancer treatment is hard enough, but many women say that they never get any consultation or help when it comes to the impact on their sexual health. And this is a problem for millions of women that gets essentially ignored. That changes next hour. We're going to talk about it, and we'll talk about what everyone can do to deal with it better, including the medical community. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I want to read an email from Charles, a listener who is no fan of Democrats in state government or gun policy. And the question of gun policy, I think, is an important one. Charles says, "This hour is fake news. Queen Hochul has decreed almost all of New York to be a sensitive area where concealed carry is prohibited. It's physically impossible for anyone to carry a gun in such locations. Therefore, no one can ever be shot in such locations, including Rochester. So what's being referenced can't be taking place, right? Unless, of course, such a statement is ridiculous and the point of the so-called Concealed Carry Improvement Act wasn't to stop what happens in Rochester on a nightly basis. Maybe there should be some focus on solutions that would actually work, seeing as how the policies of both Hochul and Cuomo aren't producing any tangible results. That's from Charles. So first of all, Charles, we definitely can talk about gun policy, and I appreciate any comments. I do want to keep us grounded in some facts here. So when you look at shooting deaths per capita in this country, the highest number of shooting deaths per capita are happening in the states with the least restrictive gun laws. They are generally contiguously in the American South, highest per capita. Having said that, if you look at any state on its own, you will see different shooting deaths and shooting violence per capita, pretty big differences from place to place. And often, not always, cities have higher rates of that. Certainly Rochester is struggling in many, many ways with that. But the idea that, well, the big problem is concealed carry that's preventing you from carrying a gun in public is, I don't even know what you're inferring, that heroic citizens are being prevented from stopping these the shootings that are happening, or I don't know. But the data doesn't support the idea that more restrictive gun policies make it worse. The data says that the least restrictive gun policy states have the highest number of gun deaths per capita. Now, it doesn't mean that every policy is perfect or that all of our guests will agree. And I want to ask our guests what they would like to see. And I'll start with our guests on the phone. And Mike Well-Powell, when it comes to you know, what's going to bring down the actual problem of gun violence, and we had 76 homicides in the city last year, 63 were the result of firearms. We've had 14 this year, 10 are the result of firearms. So the vast majority of killings in this community happen with a firearm. What starts to get at the root of that, and what doesn't work, Mike Well?
So I don't want to claim to be an expert on gun violence, sure, or anything like that. But speaking as a citizen, I just think like the availability of guns now and the emergence of what we call ghost guns, those things wasn't around 10 years ago, 20 years ago, where a person can just order parts for guns and use them on city streets. So I think that has something to do with it, the availability of guns. And I also think, I don't know what influences it, but I think there's also a mentality now to use those guns in a legal manner that wasn't present 20 or 30 years ago either. So those are just two things that I think, the availability and the mentality to use those guns has increased over the years.
Okay. Lewis, what do you think?
Very interesting. I also sit in the anti-gun violence committee with Councilman Lightfoot, and I can tell you that in the month of April, like Mr. Powell mentioned, the city of Rochester police department took 6 ghost guns off the street. We are finding through federal reports that most of the guns that are taken off the street are coming from Atlanta and from Ohio. There's going to be a public report that comes out hopefully within the next couple of weeks. And I really feel that, you know, enforcement, but the right type of enforcement needs to happen. You know, there's just a sense of you could do whatever you like, because nothing's going to happen. There's no repercussions. There's no anything. So I think the citizens feel like they're you know, once you take people's hope away, you take a lot from them. And it's whether they want to stay in the community. There's a lot of great people in the community. My aunt has lived on Woodward Street for 50 years, and she's still there, and she refuses to go anywhere. She goes, this is my neighborhood. This is where I belong. This is where I feel great and safe, but I know there's a lot of bad things happening around me. So it's a difficult thing to say what is the action to take, but I think the citizens want more from the police department, saying we have to cut the tails, but we need the right type of enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just lost confidence in our police department.
Well, Lewis, I want to share something, but I want to sort of be careful with overstating it. I mean, so there are 3 police officers that I know sort of closely in my circle, in different departments, mm-hmm. in different places, and all 3 of them, so it's 100%, and this is a very small sample, and I don't know what an actual representative sample of police officers would tell us, but all 3 of them tell me that when they arrive at the scene, it is always something that they want It is never something they want to see, to have people who are armed in a volatile scene. They say it makes it worse all the time. The idea that people, that there are guns on the scene, whether it's a domestic, mm-hmm. some kind of a personal dispute, an argument, and even well-intended citizens, they're saying, I don't want you armed. It is going to make... All three of them tell me, I always hope that when we show up, please don't be armed. Please tell me there's not guns at the scene. Now, again, I want to state, I don't know if what I'm hearing is an outlier and that the average police officer would tell you, oh, no, it'd be great if every citizen was armed in every situation. But I'm not hearing that. And I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about, Lewis, when you've been on a lot of different scenes, I know, and most of us have not been on a scene when there's... people been shot or that kind of volatility. Can you just talk a little bit about what that is like?
Well, you know, it's really in EMS. I mean, our goal is to save a life or to get people out of a bad situation and not to go in there and act like we're police officers, because we're not police officers. You know, we always tell our people, if you want to be a cop, go and take the test, you know, but we're here to treat patients. And sometimes we've come across many times where we're treating our patient is actually the suspect. So no matter what, we can't treat them any different than we would treat, you know, a person that's the victim. I mean, those scenes as of late have become really, really bad, in the sense that before, there was a lot of control from RPD due to the fact that they're so short and everything else. We can't go into a scene until RPD deems it safe for us to enter the scene. And that's us or the fire departments. And sometimes it's hard as an old medic, or myself as an old guy, no matter what, I didn't care if the cops are there or not, I'm going into the scene, I'm going to do my job, what I'm trained to do. But now we can't do that anymore because we don't know. The scenes have become so unsafe for EMS.
Yeah, and Michael, one of the things that I'm thinking about is access, just the proliferation of guns, how many guns there are. You know, we've talked to people like Justin Morris and others who do daily work in communities where they'll talk to young people, sometimes kids, teenagers, young adults, often boys and men, but not always, who will say, like, if I don't have a gun, someone else is going to. Like, I got to have a gun. And mm-hmm. and it's not hard to get them. Do you think your life would be different, Michael, if you know, the idea of having a gun in a volatile moment weren't always so easy?
Of course. I think that life would be better if it wasn't so many guns and it wasn't so much violence. But unfortunately, in the culture that we live in the city we live in the United States, guns is here, and sometimes guns get in the wrong hands. So being able to prevent a person from getting them easily, of course, because a lot of the times people just don't have time to calm down. People don't have, they have a gun and something happens and they use it in that same split second. So if I didn't have a gun, or if it wasn't so easy to get a gun, a lot of the times you'll be forced to handle situations differently, especially like disputes. They're saying that a lot of the violence is a result of disputes, and it's a dispute with a person that has a gun. So if you was to take away the gun or take away the accessibility, you would have no choice but to handle those disputes in a different way.
Nancy, as someone who, Nancy is the chair of the Lewis Street Committee, as someone who, you know, is a neighborhood leader, how much do you think about the actual nuts and bolts of what the laws are saying or doing? How much of this is sort of cultural? What do you want to see change?
Well, to be honest with you, first of all, I feel that we've taken away the rights of our police officers and our first responders to be able to protect us. It's like the laws that are now in effect are not supporting them, and they're there for our own safety.
What's an example?
For example, nowadays it's more like release arrest and release. I'm not for that. I feel that you do need time to keep the person that does create the crime to be able to have time to be locked up and realize I really did something wrong. Now with releasing them and giving them the petitions, so far as just coming a ticket appearance, it's showing them that you can just get a slap in the hand, and it doesn't matter what kind of crime you're into. So,
Suzanne, you agree with that?
I have mixed emotions about. I realize I'd like to see that, you know, we have repeat offenders who are, that's something that we need to do. I do believe in second chances. I think that if I didn't have a second chance, I wouldn't be here. I think it's, we have to find ways to support our first responders. They are indeed taking their lives in their hands every single day, and especially now with the proliferation of guns. We also, though, have a responsibility as citizens to see what can we do, as well as just saying this is just not a police problem. It is such as our civics taught in school. How are we supporting families, and how do we support families in raising children who are supportive of the community? How do we resolve conflict? If you have a way, I think at East High, one of the things that was astonishing to me was when the U of R decided to help and take over parts of the school, that they said part of this was that we had to change the culture, not of the students, but of the teachers even, and how they actually responded to how people were engaged. And then you work on the children. So it's us adults who have to also think about how are we responding to this. I'll never forget, maybe I would say, this is an old problem, but 30 years ago, I was talking to a friend of mine, and she said somebody really had disrespected her child, and she was carried a gun, and she said, I walked down the street, I realized I had a gun in my hand, and I was dangerous. And she said, I can't do that. How am I going to do not shoot somebody? That was like, this is a woman who I respected, and I realized that we're like rubber bands. If you keep stretching that rubber band and people are tense, there's no elasticity. So when addressed with a conflict resolution, as Mike Well said, you don't have time to calm down, and you need time to calm down. How do we find ways to have people calm down and not be so reactive?
Well, the lockdown on violence involves a lot of different groups. It's coming up on Saturday, June 3rd, starting at noon at 53 Lewis Street. They'd love to see you there. It is happening at the Lewis Street YMCA Neighborhood Center. So that's Saturday, June 3rd, starting at noon. And the events involved, will include Hinge Neighbors, Lewis Street YMCA, Market View Heights Collective Action Project, the Lewis Street Committee, Lewis Street Alumni, Master Gardener of the Cornell Cooperative Extension Munro County, Master Gardener Program will be there. And the Munro County Sheriff, the Rochester Police, and the Rochester Fire Department will all be repped there. How would you say, Nancy, how are relations with police in your community? What do you want to see in your neighborhood when it comes to policing?
Well, what we're working on is actually rebuilding a trust between the police officers and also the community.
How's it going?
That's going pretty good. We're able, now we have the new lieutenant that's involved, and we have a few police officers that are sitting on our committee, and we get to hear feedback from them, and we get to understand their point of view. So building that relationship is really important. So we're all for it, and we're going to continue to build a relationship with them. And we want the community to feel like they're just not police officers. They're part of the community, their family.
And so if officers say to you, what can we do to build better trust in the neighborhood, you tell them what?
I would tell them, come out, meet the community,
On foot?
Be on foot. Don't be afraid no more. Let them realize that you're a part of this community also. Let them realize that you are also a family, that we're no longer divided. We don't want no division between the police officers or the first responders. We want to be able to rebuild Rochester as a one community.
Suzanne, how do you see the relationship right now?
I think we have to continue building it. I think and I think it's responsive, not high-powered response, but just being there. I happen to live right across from Planned Parenthood. We have police presence there a lot, but it's also would be interesting to have the police come out of the cars and talk with the neighbors and things like that. Their life is hard, and we find that in the neighborhood, the police are saying, well, we're very shorthanded, and when you become shorthanded, you make decisions based upon dollars and cents and not necessarily on how do you go where it's most important. And most important is building trust in the community.
Mike Wellpaw, are you still part of the PAB?
No, I haven't been on the PAB for a couple of years.
Okay, I just want to make sure we get that out of the way. And
right.
And how do you see police-community relations?
To be honest, I think it has a long way to go. You know, it was just a lot of tension, I believe, 2021 or 2020. It was a lot of tension with police and Rochesterians. I think we have a long way to go, but events like this that we're having, where we inviting the whole community, first responders, police officers, I think that's a step in the right direction. So we just need more of that, more police willing, like Nancy said, to be able to walk the streets. And what I personally would like to see is some police officers outside of their uniforms volunteering in nonprofit agencies, volunteering in some of the IR centers and going into the schools outside of their uniform. And I think that's because when you put the uniform on, it's hard to have your own identity. You become the police officer that you're interacting with the community. People need to see you outside of that light as well. So when they see you with your uniform on, they'll be able to still know or have a point of reference of who you are because they met you somewhere else too. So I think you got to personalize it a little bit more. So I'd like to see more of that too. But I think this event is in the right direction, but there's still a lot of work to do.
Lewis, how do you see the state of relations?
I agree. It still has a long way to go. I'm glad that City Council voted on refunding the police athletic league. I have been in constant contact with the sergeant that's going to be in charge of that, and he's from the training academy. And I took and I said, we should have all public services emergency responders be part of that and to help recruit kids from around the city and make it year round, not just baseball and softball, but kickball, basketball, volleyball, whatever you name it. And I agree with Mike, where it's just like not in a uniform, it's just people and people from the community that work in the community or live in the community showing that there is something else besides hanging on street corners and doing the wrong thing. Because I think idle teenage minds become inquisitive and want to do, well, let's try this. There's nothing else to do. So I think we need to give them something to do. I think we need the support where first responders are involved in the community that they serve. Whether they live in it or not, they probably spend more time on our city streets than they do in the street that they live on. So I think the community is asking for respect. You know, the community policing model of the old days of the section police, I know that's a whole, I don't want to get into that. We'll spend 5 hours here, but the old days of police sections where the cops knew the neighbors, they knew kind of who belonged, who didn't belong, and basically, you know, community policing has to return. I know there's always a cost as a city homeowner, taxpayer. I'm willing to accept that cost because I think it's needed. I think it's going to make our community safer. I think it's going to make our communities build trust back with the department.
And it sounds like, it sounds like that's part and parcel with what Suzanne's been saying. You want to add to that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think we wanted to have some police here today, quite honestly. and who we wanted to, and I think they would be willing to do it. So we had to go through the chains of what were they going to be allowed to come and participate today. And I used to work for a corporation, and you always had to pass through your communication, and because obviously if I spoke to the press, I'd probably say something wrong, and there was a very little trust in what I might say to in the corporate world. That's what it's like with the police. And I think sometimes maybe the administration has to trust their members.
The rank and file, yeah.
Right, to say the right thing. They're part of us. And then if you put this thing that you separate people from even participating in a program like this, it talks about, it's a separative type of thing. So we have to work on that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I can, the one thing I would say is in the modern media age, in the social media age, one comment that's perceived incorrectly or even a mistake goes viral, and we don't often show a lot of grace for people who make mistakes. Now, that's not me saying that we shouldn't hold police to high standards or all people in our community to a certain standard. But I guess I understand a little bit of the reticence to say that, are we going to be graceful if someone says something that isn't exactly in line with what people expect? But I also take the large point, and as someone who's got four microphones around this table, we always want more participation, not less.
Right.
So I hope that people feel that open door. Let me also get one more question from a listener asking, could someone please speak to the issue of gangs and drug selling? Nancy, what do you see in your neighborhood when it comes to gang activity or drug sales?
In our neighborhood, yes, there is groups that you will call gangs. I don't know where people got the understanding that there isn't no gangs in Rochester, because there is certain groups that are, we call groups, you call gangs. We call brotherhoods, you call gangs. It's actually, a lot of them out there, they're all over the city, and they do have conflicts with one another, and they do go into each other's neighborhood and react certain ways that they shouldn't be reacting. So first of all, it's facing the fact that, yes, there are gangs in Rochester, and how do we get it under control is probably reaching out to them, having them more involved in your community, taking them away from the negativities in their life and bringing positive formats in their lives. Having them more involved, feeling like they can make a change instead of making changes forcibly, you know? So first of all, it's facing the fact that there are gangs in the city. Yes, they are.
Okay. And Mike, well, about a minute, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think it's an issue with drugs and gangs. It has been an issue in Rochester for as long as I can remember back. I think right now we have a lot of grassroots organizations, a lot of funding is coming in for that ground level work to be done. So I think that we can make some headway in those areas soon.
Michael says, I was born in Rochester, worked and retired here. I'd like to stay here for the rest of my life. Thank you for what you're doing to try and stop violence. What can I do to help? Suzanne, what can people like Michael do to help?
Well, come. First of all, come to this on and I
Saturday,
think,
June 3rd, the lockdown of violence
much.
At noon. Yes,
I need that help. That's what
I got you. I got you.
And I think also it also is participate. It is our community. And whatever you feel in your gut that you need to do, you should be doing it. And I think it's reach out and find a way to do that.
Lewis, what can people do to help?
Jobs and opportunities. That's what we need. We have to give people jobs, opportunity, and hope. So we have a great program here where we pay people to go to school. We pay for your college tuition. And we give you a job and make you a union member immediately to become an EMT or paramedic. So jobs and opportunities, what people want.
Okay, Nancy, what can people like Michael do to help?
They need to get involved in their community, not only in their community, but they need to get involved citywide. You need to speak out, speak about your feelings, how you feel about the city. Come together as one united Rochester. The separation is not working for us, so let's come together as one unit.
In 15 seconds, Mike Well, last thoughts. What can people do to help?
First, you can come to the Lockdown on Violence on June 3rd at 3:30. Also, the Reentry and Community Development Center always looking for volunteers.
The event's coming up, and I misspoke earlier, it's from 12 to 3:30. So 3.5 hours of a big community event, Saturday, June 3rd. It is the Lockdown on Violence, and it is something that they would love to see you a part of. It's at the Lewis Street YMCA Neighborhood Center on Lewis Street. Everyone's welcome, even if you don't live in that neighborhood. I know they would all love to see you there. Nancy Machuska-Wood, she's chair of the Lewis Street Committee. Thank you for being here this hour.
Thank you so much for having us.
Suzanne Mayer, co-founder and president of Hinge Neighbors. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Mike Well Powell, executive director of Reentry and Community Development Center. Thank you, Mike Well.
Thanks for having me.
Louis Aponte has many, many hats, including chair of Jazana Neighborhood Association. Thank you, sir. Good talking to you.
Thank you.
More connections coming up.